mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the Hancock County Sheriff's Office being recognized for excellence in policy management and training, just in time for National Correctional Officers Week. Sheriff Michael Heldman will join us. Also this morning in our Salute to Service, spring and summer travel season is here, and who better to offer advice on smart and efficient travel than the U.S. Army? And happening around town, we have details on this year's annual Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive, the local chapter of the National Association of Letter Carriers. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. So a number of things going on that are worth your attention. Among the first things you need to know, most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, the former home of Jesse Owens in Cleveland is now on the path to being named a historic city landmark. Cleveland's Development Planning and Sustainability Committee approved that designation this week. It is a home on East 100th Street. The residence in the city's Fairfax neighborhood was where Owens lived at the time he won four gold medals at the 1936 Olympics in Germany. Correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't win the gold medals at his house, right? I mean, I'm all for saving, you know, very significant landmarks and preserving those, but you can't save everything. I don't know, the former home of Jesse Owens in Cleveland. It's cool, but you draw the line. If you save everything, you don't have any room left for new stuff. I don't know, but I'm not criticizing. I'm just thinking out loud here. I think it's kind of interesting. I saw this on the Newswire this morning. Where do you feel inspired? As you're getting up this morning and getting ready for work, where do you feel most inspired? Where do the best ideas come to you from? For me, I think in the shower. I mean, you know, I'm standing in the shower and, you know, getting ready for work in the morning, and, you know, these ideas pop into my head. Does it happen to you? You feel inspired and get these moments of, you know, brainstorming moments in the shower? 33, apparently that's not the most popular. A new poll, 2,000 Americans, finds that 33% of American workers, fully one-third, have had good work-related ideas in bed. They're laying in bed. 21% have felt inspiration at a coffee shop. 14% had creativity strike at the gym. Okay. One-third of workers. Obviously, people could pick more than one. One-third of workers say that going for a walk can help get them out of a rut at work. Both employers and employees are acknowledging the link between physical activity and mental acuity and the ability to perform at our best. This is according to Brooks Hagen from Lifetime Work, who commissioned the poll. The idea of an activity-based workspace design is more relevant than ever, according to this. That's what they're promoting, a more activity-based workspace. Give you the opportunity to get moving rather than just sitting in a cubicle, get up, move around, that kind of thing. That's what they're promoting, and that's what it is. But again, I'm in the shower, right? I have the moments of inspiration. I don't know. Speaking of getting a good workout at the gym, I saw this story. Equinox. It's a luxury gym. Equinox. In New York City, and they also have locations in Texas. And at their New York City and Highland Park, Texas locations, Equinox Luxury Gym is launching a health program called The Optimize, with a mission of helping people live to be 100. That is the goal. Now, I don't know if they can guarantee this or not, but they are charging $3,000 a month for a membership in this program. $3,000 a month. If I'm going to pay $40,000 a year for a gym membership, I better live to at least 100. You know what I mean? They will test for 100 biomarkers and include 16 hours a month of coaching and training. They say it's like a Formula One athlete. Kind of goes kind of training program of a Formula One athlete. Without, of course, running into walls at 250 miles an hour. And it's other than that. But, man, $3,000 a month. I can't even imagine spending that kind of money just to live to be 100. But if I'm going to, I better live to be 100. I would be very, very disappointed if I didn't, you know? Speaking of sports, this was an interesting headline in the news. I think we have reached critical mass in the college football landscape. And with all of the bowl games, there had been some talk with the expansion of the college football playoffs that maybe they would trim back the number of college football bowls, postseason bowl games, because some of them, frankly, are just not very good. And they feature teams that just don't deserve to be there. I mean, let's face it. You know, teams, if the best you can do is a 500 record in the regular season, or even sometimes below a 500 record, they'll let losing teams into bowl games if they don't have enough teams to fill out all of the bowls. Usually, at least you have to have a 50-50 record, 500 record during the regular season to make the bowl. But sometimes it doesn't work that way, and they've got to invite losing teams, actually, to play in a postseason bowl. And it's just, it's crazy. But here, I think, is a clue that maybe we have too many bowls. Snoop Dogg is now the sponsor of his own bowl game. That's right. The Arizona Bowl in Tucson will now be the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop. The Snoop Dogg Bowl. The game is played on the campus of the University of Arizona, was previously sponsored by Barstool Sports, and this will be, it says here, the first college bowl game sponsored by an alcohol brand, Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop. This year's game set to be played on December 28th. It is definitely one to look forward to, the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. Can we all agree that we have too many bowl games? If Snoop Dogg has his own, I'm just saying. Let's see. Again, wonder if people will be betting, wagering on the Snoop Dogg Bowl. If they are, chances are good, it will be folks in Nevada. This is a new study from the financial site WalletHub, and it is no surprise, Nevada, the state of Nevada, has been named the most gambling-addicted state in the U.S. Now, this is kind of a foregone conclusion. We certainly did not need a data study to reveal that. But it is kind of interesting that number two, South Dakota, the second most gambling-addicted state, they used a set of 20 metrics from the number of places to gamble to the share of adults with gambling disorders. Nevada was number one, home of Las Vegas, Sin City. South Dakota was second. Montana was third. Louisiana, fourth place. And Pennsylvania rounded out the top five. As gambling has expanded nationwide, this becomes more relevant. The least addicted state was Utah, where gambling is still illegal. However, that being said, gambling is also illegal in Hawaii, but Hawaii ranked number 44 on the list. So Ohio, by the way, ranks 27th, while Michigan ranks 17th. And this is one list that we're happy that Michigan is higher on the list than we are. We wouldn't say that all the time, but on this one, it is good to be below Michigan. Ohio's 27th most gambling-addicted state. Now, a couple of other newsworthy items to start with this morning, just worth knowing here. A Tennessee-based cleaning company will pay almost $650,000 in penalties after employing at least two dozen children at slaughtering and meatpacking facilities. The Labor Department announced the deal on Monday with Fayette Janitorial Service. An investigation earlier this year found that children as young as 13 were put on overnight sanitation shifts at meat plants in Iowa and Virginia. So many things wrong with this story. So many things. We had 13-year-olds working in meatpacking facilities overnight. I don't know. That's just, I mean, in what universe do you think that that is, you think that is appropriate? $650,000 in penalty. 13-year-olds working overnight shifts in meatpacking facilities. That is a no-no. At some point, someone, I can't believe somebody didn't say, we might want to rethink this policy. You know what I mean? And how about this? This is pretty crazy. A new American university course is putting a new spin on the impact of music superstar Taylor Swift. Now, there have been stories in the news in the past of colleges offering courses in Taylor Swift. But this, and you know, and her music and her success, but this specifically is called Swiftonomics. And it will be offered this fall at American University, examining Taylor Swift's career through concepts such as supply and demand, market power, and gender-based economics. The economics of Taylor Swift. Swiftonomics. I actually think that's kind of an interesting idea, given how incredibly powerful and influential and financially successful she has been. To do a whole course on Taylor Swift's financial prowess. Kind of interesting. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Showers and storms possible today, a high around 80. Showers and storms possible tonight, a low around 60. This week is National Correctional Officers Week, and the Hancock County Sheriff's Office and other area sheriff's offices are saluting their correctional officers. We spoke with Captain Jesse Starrett, jail administrator at the Hancock County Jail, about the crucial role correctional officers perform.
It was originally put in place by President Reagan, just kind of to recognize the role of the corrections officer, often kind of a behind-the-scenes, often underappreciated portion of the law enforcement. Their job often can be stressful or intense depending on the situation. And so just like to take this week to recognize them for the jobs that they do.
Get more of our conversation with Captain Starrett about National Correctional Officers Week and the story on our website. Ohio's governor announced millions of dollars in funding for local law enforcement agencies to help their drug task forces enforce the state's drug laws and combat illegal drug activity.
Grants from the 2024 Ohio Drug Law Enforcement Fund will support drug task forces that impact 36 counties on issues of drug trafficking, pharmaceutical diversion, and other organized criminal activity associated with the drug trade. The program, which is administered through the Office of Criminal Justice Services, is also intended to help local agencies enhance the safety of Ohioans through multi-jurisdictional task forces.
ONN's Clay Gordon reporting. College graduates who want to stay in the Buckeye State after they graduate may have access to financial assistance for home buying.
The Ohio Housing Finance Agency created the Down Payment Assistance Program back in 2009 for college students who want to live in Ohio after they graduate.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. The University of Findlay just held its commencement ceremonies on Saturday. The city of Findlay issued a road construction update for this week. Among the closures, Imperial Lane will be closed to through traffic from Saratoga Drive to Bristol Drive for curb replacement. See the full list of closures and the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, a recent honor for the Hancock County Sheriff's Office, being recognized for excellence in policy management and training. And this comes just in time for National Correctional Officers Week. Sheriff Michael Heldman is with us in the studio this morning. Thanks very much for taking the time.
No problem.
This recognition is from an organization called Lexipol, which I understand in law enforcement circles is pretty prestigious.
Yes, it's we've been a part of Lexipol, I believe, it's probably more years than I think now, because Captain Treese was the one that really in the beginning with Lexapol, worked with their consultants, put it all together for us. And so this is our third year in a row we achieved the gold achievement. Mm-hmm. And so now we just have to keep maintaining it. And as the Ohio Collaborative gives us new levels to achieve, we have to work those into our policy procedure. And it's a constant work, but it's something it takes the liability off of the sheriff's office if we follow these mm-hmm. Practices that they gave to us.
So best practices.
Best practices, yes.
That was actually one of the things that I wanted to ask, because when, you know, it says excellence in policy management and training, that is, you know, kind of industry speak for what? What is involved in that?
Well, anything that changes, the laws change, the way we do things that change, mm-hmm. What they see is the, as I mentioned, the Ohio Collaborative, what they have that they recommend, recommendations that come down that law enforcement do this, whether it be the hiring practices, whether it be the way we do our pursuits. That's some of the things that's been most recent. Mm-hmm. And long as we follow the guidelines and work them into our policy, that's where we can achieve and maintain those levels.
And obviously this comes at a time when law enforcement practices, policies, procedures have never been under greater scrutiny than they are right now.
Oh, they have been. And it's amazing. You go back 5-6 years, and it's just been constant that we've been looking at these things. And so as we train, as we develop our policies, with this Lexapol, they give us daily training bulletins once a month, or our training officer can put them together. And we normally have 6 or 7 training bulletins a month for the deputies to look at. It takes about 3 or 4 minutes to read through and answer the questions and take the little test that goes with them. But they're important that they have those things, because that goes toward training of law enforcement that is recognized by the state of Ohio.
And there's always the balancing act, I'm sure, of implementing these best practices and not to the greatest extent possible, not making your job any harder than it already is.
Yeah, true. Making the job harder. And that is something, when you look at these things, that the policies that we have, you want the people, our deputies, to understand them and be able to implement them when they come face-to-face with these type of things. And so we have to make it understandable, mm-hmm. and be able to keep things where they need to be, and so that people can do them all the time.
The bottom line is it builds trust within the community that you serve.
Absolutely. And, you know, if we're consistent on what we do, mm-hmm. the people that we serve will recognize that as well.
Yeah. We mentioned that this is Correctional Officers Week.
Busy time of the year.
There are a lot of things. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about communications.
Correct.
Saluting the dispatchers and so on. Next week is Police Week. We're focusing on correctional officers
this week.
Talk about the importance of recognizing the difficulties of that job.
Corrections officers are people that are not seen because they're locked up. Let's face it. They're confined to the floor. They handle the inmates on a daily basis. Make sure they're clothed, make sure they're fed. Make sure their medical needs are taken care of, mm-hmm. their psychological needs. So the corrections officers have to be constantly working with these people, talking with people. And, you know, many times a corrections officer will recognize that someone really isn't acting quite right. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the mental health worker needs mm-hmm. to talk to them. Mm-hmm. Maybe they got a phone call from somebody at home that their girlfriend dumped them. And so all these things have to be recognized by a corrections officer, and to make sure that these people don't do something they shouldn't do within the jail.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it causes fights with the other inmates. Sometimes they get depressed and they'll have an attempt on their life.
Mm-hmm.
So these people need to be really give them a big pat on the back and say thank you for what they do.
Is it one of the toughest jobs in law enforcement?
Yes, it is, because a law enforcement officer going out on a daily basis, it is a very tough job. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But mentally and strenuously, it is probably more difficult.
As a result, is that one of the areas where you see the greatest turnover?
Oh, absolutely.
In law enforcement?
The average, on the national average, is 5 years. Mm-hmm. We've got several officers there that have been there 15, going on 20 years. Mm. But it takes a dedicated person.
The reason I ask is because, as we all know, in just about every industry, it's becoming more and more difficult to hang on to good people. Right. Whether we're talking the private sector, public employment, I would imagine this is an area where that's a constant concern.
It's a constant concern. We're hiring, as you well know, and people know that after COVID, during COVID, mm-hmm. our jail we lost staff. And we were down, and we had a portion of the facility closed. We've been open a year and a half now, fully open. We are within, I think, two people being fully staffed, which is probably the first time in probably 6 years. Mm. So it's a constant turnover, as you say.
And constant catch 22 that it just makes correctional officers' jobs more difficult when you don't have full staffing.
Right. And you know, that
makes it
overtime.
Harder to hang on to the people that you have.
That's right. You burn them out.
You've got to snowball.
Because they are working overtime.
Yeah.
And they're doing extra duties or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So, yes, it does make it more difficult.
What is the key to getting more people involved in that kind of a career? Because, as you say, it takes a special person.
Well, one of the things we're looking at, what we've started a year and a half ago, was a cadet program. And so if people start working in our jail and they work and they can work toward going to the cadet program, we put them through the academy mm-hmm. to be a law enforcement, be a deputy sheriff.
Yeah.
There are some trade-offs. I mean, it is beneficial. I worked in the corrections facility for several years, and you get to know these people, and yes, they're bad on the street, but you get to know them personally. And
everybody has a story.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to this day that I'll be walking somewhere out in the public and somebody will come up to me and say, thank you. I remember you from working in the jail and talking to me. Not everybody likes to be talked to those people, but, you know, they are people.
It sounds like as difficult as it can be, that job, it can also provide some pretty incredible rewards.
Absolutely. Right. And, you know, there are some officers up there that have done some amazing things and helped save lives to, you know, break up fights and so forth.
Yeah. With the, we may reference the Lexpol recognition. Mm-hmm. Does that cover correctional officers as well, or is that primarily for, like, road officers and public?
Former jail administrator Ryan Kidwell did look at Lexpol. Some of the things that they had in their policy didn't quite work for our jail to be in the Lexpol side because they didn't quite blend into the jail standards of Ohio that we should have.
Yeah,
they do have a jail format, but we don't use it.
Okay. Again, the Hancock County Sheriff's Office once again being recognized for excellence in policy management and training, and as we mentioned, National Correctional Officers Week. A lot of things going on. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Michael Heldman with us this morning. Thanks
Thank
very
you.
Much for dropping by. We appreciate it. Well, of course, the spring and summer travel season is upon us. And who better to talk about traveling without the hiccups and the hassles than the U.S. Army? I mean, think about it. They have to travel a lot and certainly have become experts on it. And we are joined this morning by Major Javon Starnes. Major Starnes, what is it that you do in the Army? And talk a little bit about where your career has taken you.
Hey, Chris. Good morning. So right now I'm currently stationed in Daegu, South Korea. And we're under a unit called United States Forces Korea. So we help with that ironclad commitment to the ROC, the Republic of Korea, and U.S. Alliance. So my job specifically, I am a public affairs officer. So if you will, for the audience and listeners, think of it as, you know, strategic messenger operating with storytelling, videos, production, imagery, that interface between the media and the unit, as well as telling the Army story and the stories of our men and women who served the nation.
So there in South Korea, what have you, I mean, it's not all work and no play, I'm guessing. You do get the opportunity to take advantage of being there in that part of the world to take in some of the local experiences and everything, right?
Absolutely, Chris. Just last year, I would say around this time, the springtime, I was working with Go Army on a big project. We brought three content creators to South Korea to kind of learn what it's like to be a soldier, what it's like for leisure opportunities, how do we train over here, weapons training, tactical vehicles with the 31 kilos, that's your military dog handlers. They got in the bite suit and ran to see how the dogs would chase them and kind of learn that Army life, but also leisure. So like you had mentioned, that work and balance with, you know, leisure activities and making sure that they're able to enjoy all of what the Army is offering us while we're stationed abroad over in South Korea.
And that is not the only, I would imagine that is not the only part of the world that you have been able to see during your time in the Army.
Absolutely, sir. Well, I've been able to travel all over. So, you know, whether it's for leisure, whether it's for just commuting back and forth to work wherever you are, that temporary duty for missions, we call it TDY, mm-hmm. or only PCS. We've been all over, able to take advantage of all that the Army has to offer, but also at the same time, when we were stateside, all up and down the East Coast,
yeah.
you know, training in Georgia, Virginia, Maryland, what have you.
Now, I'm curious, how much had you traveled before joining the Army?
Not as much. it's like, go figure, right? So that wasn't one of the primary reasons. You know, my primary reason was, you know, to protect people. What better way to do it than a broader audience, you know, the masses joining yeah. the Army? But this is an added benefit, Chris, definitely. So, you know, with work comes travel. It's not always where you want to go. But sometimes you have to just take the best, you know.
Sure.
Sometimes you may end up in a position where it's like, let me just get out and explore.
Well,
let me go right instead of always pulling out and going left.
Yeah, well, and I would imagine that there have been instances where you've ended up in places that you would not necessarily have traveled to on your own, but have discovered are actually pretty cool places once you get there.
Right, so... on a deployment, you know, I was bouncing between Afghanistan and Kuwait. And Kuwait is actually, it has a beautiful downtown area. And like by the mall, amazing. While I was deployed, I was able to take some leisure time, you know, to kind of unwind. And I chose to go to Dubai. And I flew my wife over there. She met me. We stayed out there for a couple of days. We had a blast. I'm talking everything you can imagine. The light show at night, the tallest building. The mall there, Chris, they have their own app for the mall, so you don't get lost inside of the mall, but at the various stores.
Yeah. So, as you mentioned, you were not much of a traveler before joining the Army, so what best practices have you gleaned from your travels that you could kind of share with, that would apply in the civilian world?
Right, so... We're a family of five. So my wife and I, we have three kids. And when we were potty training, I'm talking road trips, you know, the dreaded words from the back of the car. Daddy, mommy, I have to use the bathroom. And to avoid having to pull over every 45 minutes, we bought something called pee cups. We found them on Amazon. You know, they make them for the little ones. My son had one. My two daughters had one. But it helps, you know, with that confidence building. You know, when you're potty training, it's airtight. It's sealed. There's no spill, no leaking. And they can use it strapped into the car seat. They're designed that way. And it was a blessing in disguise to be able to use those. Also, I would say a number two tip would be possibly the collapsible carts, but make sure they fold, pro tip, on both axes. They're like the star of traveling. You don't need to, you know, try to hunt and find one in the hotel lobby and you're tired. You don't want to have to bring it back down to the lobby. You have one already. Just take yours. Mm. And then also packing cubes, Chris. They come in multiple shapes, sizes, colors. You can color coordinate for the family. But the Army taught me to fold and roll. And that's what I've been doing still to this day. And I can fit so much more in that luggage. You wouldn't believe it.
I tell you, I recently discovered that trick of rolling and the packing cubes, and you'd be shocked
it works. At
just how much of a difference it makes. Not just in terms of getting everything in, but keeping everything sort of organized that it doesn't become a mess in the suitcase and all of that. So it's really
Absolutely.
Again, Major Javon Starnes with us this morning talking about travel advice gleaned from his years in the U.S. Army. Where do folks learn more about where the Army can take them?
Absolutely, Chris. So for the listeners, visit GoArmy.com to learn more about the 200-plus jobs and opportunities. There's something there for everyone. This is my second career in the Army. I changed over after 10 years. You definitely can find something for you.
Join the Army and see the world. Isn't that what they always say? And in some cases, it is certainly quite literal. Major Javon Starnes, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a blessed day. Thank you, Chris.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Do you remember the story? I think we had it a couple of weeks ago about the squatters in Georgia who had basically taken over this million-dollar home after being hired to do some renovations. They decided to just move in and stay. And because of the strange laws that they have in the state of Georgia, the owners couldn't really do anything about it. They had to take them to court. It was going to be a long, drawn-out process. Just really bizarre story. I don't know if this is the same case or a different case in Georgia, but it is related to the same thing. South Fulton Police is in suburban Atlanta. Arrested six squatters who have been living in a $500,000 home. They didn't arrest them for, you know, stealing the home or living in the home illegally. They arrested them for car theft. The suspects have been staying in the home for 5 months, but what they couldn't get them out. But what finally got law enforcement was finally able to arrest them because they allegedly stole a neighbor's car while she was out of town. The squatting was not a problem. It was the car theft that eventually landed them in jail. Squatters stole her car, and they brought it back brought it to the place where they were staying, the neighbor's car. I guess they figured if they could steal a home, basically, then they could steal a car. Nope. they get very serious when they steal cars. Mel Keaton of the Hampton Oaks Homeowners Association said the vehicle has been since returned to its owner, and local residents are hoping a new law that is making its way through the Georgia legislature will make it easier to evict squatters. The Georgia Squatter Reform Act will require offenders to provide authorization of consent to occupy a structure within 3 days or face arrest. So no more 5 month, 6 month ordeals trying to get squatters out of their home. But it's just what undid them was not basically moving in and stealing the home. It was stealing the car. Now that's what we take seriously. State of Georgia. Elsewhere in the broken news, from the international file, I have a number of stories here. A zoo in China has been caught painting dogs black and white and passing them off as pandas. the Taizhou Zoo in China apparently was defrauding visitors by painting Chow dogs. They're very fluffy, and I guess you could say maybe they look a little bit like pandas. So they've been painting them black and white and passing them off as pandas. Zookeepers reportedly trimmed the dogs' manes and dyed their faces black to look like pandas. A rep for the zoo defended the scam, admitted the scam and defended the practice, saying that there are no panda bears at the zoo. And we wanted to do this to give people the feeling that they were seeing pandas. Even though they didn't have pandas at the zoo. Nobody wants to come see a dog. They want to come see pandas. We don't have any pandas, so we painted the dogs. The zoo denied accusations it was engaging in animal cruelty, insisting that people dye their hair. We just dyed the fur of the dogs. Natural dye can be used on dogs if they have long fur. So... All right, then. Now I'm curious as to... Are there any zoos around here that do that? I don't know. A group of tourists on the Chobe River in Namibia got a little too up close and personal with nature when their boat was attacked by an angry hippo. A video obtained by news reporters shows the boat cruising by a pod of hippos just minding their own business in the river when one of the hippopotamuses roars toward the boat and takes a big bite out of the motor, causing it to stall. Jackie Boshoff was a passenger on the boat, told news reporters that it was a routine job for the skipper of the boat to approach the pod of hippos. She said he did it the way he always does it. He's been doing it for more than a decade. Everyone was quiet on the boat, not making a lot of noise. The engine was off as they approached the hippos from a safe distance. Well, apparently not so safe. The hippo attacked. Suddenly, one particular male hippo began chasing the boat out of nowhere. Why are you shocked? I mean, you go where the wild animals are, and they act like wild animals. Why are you shocked? At least you know they were hippos and not painted dogs. So, there is that. Did you hear the story about the group of bakers in France that are rolling in dough? And we don't mean money in this case. A team of 18 French bakers have collectively broken the Guinness World Record for the longest baguette ever baked. World's longest baguette. 461 feet in length. According to a social media post, the baguette had to be baked using a special oven or special equipment that was constructed specifically for this purpose. I don't know. Why'd you buy some sort of special oven to bake a 461-foot baguette? I mean, it's not like you'll be using it ever again, right? I mean, it's a one-time thing, unless you're going to, you know, make 400-foot baguettes routinely. That seems like a pretty significant expense to go through just to set the record. But that's what they did. And if you think that sounds extreme, I guess there is a reason that they justify it. I mean, baguettes are, you know, French bread. But the record, the previous record, was held by a group of bakers in Italy. We can't have that. You can't have these Italian bakers baking French baguettes better than the French. The old record was 435 feet. This one, 461 feet. So, wow. That's amazing. They said the volunteers that helped got the first chance to dig into the baguette. The rest they donated to the homeless. So. And finally, in the broken news this morning, remember the story about the bee expert that had to be called in to save the Arizona Diamondbacks game last week? I believe it was on Tuesday. They had to delay the start of the game because there was a swarm of bees that were basically starting a colony on the netting behind home plate. So they had to delay the game for a couple hours, or they called in a beekeeper to remove the bees. Well, the legend of that bee expert, credited with saving the game, continues to grow. Tops announced this week that Matt Hilton now has his own baseball card. He's the beekeeper. He's got his own baseball card after signing a deal with the Topps Trading Card Company. The special card was available for 24 hours and went for $9 on the Topps website. Some fans could receive an autographed version even. The Beehive noticed ahead of Arizona's game against the Dodgers had to be delayed nearly 2 hours until the bees could be removed from the protective netting behind home plate. He ended up throwing out the first pitch, and the Diamondbacks went on to win. So, all's well that ends well. And he got his own baseball card as a result. That's awesome. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Glentz with OSU Extension. It's planting season. Drivers will be sharing roads with tractors and farm machinery. Be alert for slow-moving vehicles, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this spring to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now, your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We are very much an e-commerce society these days. You can order just about anything online, and many of us do. That has given rise to the problem of porch pirates. $8 billion in merchandise was stolen from the front doors of Americans' homes last year alone. $8 billion in losses in stolen merchandise just last year. 75% of all Americans have had a package pilfered at some point in the past. But what states are most, in what states are porch pirates most prevalent? Would you believe Alaska? At least that's according to a new study from the digital mailbox provider, iPostal One. They looked into which state has the biggest problem with stolen packages, stolen mail in general, using data on key terms like Amazon delivery stolen and similar online queries. The company says Alaska tops the nation in people with packages that have gone missing. 76.7 average monthly searches per 100,000 people. That is 58% higher than the national average. Incidentally, the most common search term for Alaskans was specifically USPS, U.S. Postal Service, lost my package. Which, I guess you can understand. It's, you know, way up there. It's, a bit of an out-of-the-way place. But Alaska, number one. Hawaii, a close second place on the unenviable ranking, with nearly 75.3 average monthly searches about stolen stuff per 100,000 people. Vermont was third, so it is number one in the continental United States. Vermont, 74.5 searches per month on average. North Dakota was fourth, nearly 72.3 searches. And North Carolina, rounding out the top five with 70.4 average searches about stolen packages per month per 100,000 people. Incidentally, the opposite end of the spectrum, the state in which you are least likely to get your porch pirated, that would be Michigan. Had just 32.7 searches on the topic on average per month. So Michigan at the bottom of the list. Oklahoma is next to last, 49th on the list, and then Ohio at 48. So all in all, we're not doing too bad. Michigan number at the very bottom, and Ohio second from the bottom in terms of porch pirates. So if you hear us talking about that and say, well, I've never had anything stolen. Well, that's because you live in Ohio and they just don't, we don't have that problem quite as frequently as some other states do, apparently, according to this study. So a little bit of good news there. So happening around town, we get details this morning on this year's annual Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive. Is happening this weekend. The local chapter of the National Association of Letter Carriers, and Jeff Kranz is with us in the studio this morning. They just keep reeling you back in.
I just can't get away, Chris.
You know what, though? It does say something about the dedication of the letter carriers to this cause that you actually keep doing this and being involved in this. Even after you're retired.
Yep.
So,
yep.
I mean,
31 years nationally.
Yeah.
We've been doing this.
And it is a huge undertaking.
Yeah, it is. Volunteers, you know, getting out there, the extra work that the active carriers have to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a year round thing to get it planned.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about the logistics of how this works, because I mean, for just the general public, you put out your donated foods by the mailbox the morning, what is Saturday morning, right?
Yep, yep.
And that's pretty much it. But what goes on behind the scenes is pretty impressive.
Yeah, so we'll have volunteers from not only the United Way, from the West Ohio Food Bank will be there.
Mm.
They come in. Probably 7:30, 8 o'clock Saturday, they'll set everything up. They'll have their trucks there. That's when we encourage your listeners to have the food out by their mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have maps printed up. Then the volunteers start rolling in, give them maps of where to go to these routes, sections of town to mm-hmm. sweep through town.
Yeah.
We've got other places, maybe some businesses that might just do something on their own.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I still carried, there's a bank on my route that just would have a table set up, and I just would go in and deliver the mail. I don't know, there's a big table of food there, and they would say, this is for yeah. you guys. So get that food back, get
yeah.
sorted, goes down to the West Ohio Food Bank in Lima. They obviously go through it to check for outdated, you know, spoilage and stuff. Then that's earmarked. Then we'll come right back to Findlay and Hancock County. So everything that's collected here will eventually get back here to be distributed to the folks in the community in need.
Yeah. It is important to recognize the volunteers who give of their time to basically do the mail carrier's job for a day, probably recognizing you know, just how challenging that job is. To hit every household every single day, but you know, to be able to cover that those routes and collect all of that, because if it were just the letter carriers, it just wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, we'd be out there for you know 8-9 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, because there's
yeah.
times that, and depending on the routes that really do get a lot of food,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
For us to do just by ourselves. That's why, you know, like I said, we have folks from the United Way,
mm-hmm.
Retired carriers like myself that go up and help out that day, get a lot of family members
mm-hmm.
of folks. So,
yeah.
you know, we need those people to help out and just recognize, your listeners recognize that if the carrier doesn't necessarily pick that up,
yeah.
don't freak out.
Yeah,
yeah, those that
exactly.
that's they're there to help us out.
Because it's not just the manpower, too, to say nothing of the space. I mean, it's not like the delivery trucks have a whole lot of extra space for a bunch of food, too. So, you know, from that standpoint. And that does bring up the point, as you mentioned, you want to have people get their donations out early in the day on Saturday, even before their normal delivery time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't please buy about 8 o'clock because
mm-hmm.
we'll get folks out shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't think that, you know, you got, my carrier doesn't get there till noon, so I'll put it out there. And there's always the option that if your listeners are out that day, that morning, mm-hmm. they can always come up to the parking lot that's right behind Great Scott. They'll see the food bank truck and stuff there.
Yeah.
And they could always come up there and drop it off as
Terrific.
Well.
Terrific. Is there... I don't mean to put you on the spot. How much food do you anticipate collecting? I mean, based on past collections and all of that.
We're probably, the past few years, we've been getting about 10 to 15,000 pounds.
Wow.
So that's how it's run. Mm-hmm. Nationally, we're just short of 2 billion with the B pounds nationally.
Wow.
Like I said, it's the largest single day food drive in the country.
Yeah. So it is Saturday, and this is primarily in town, but rural carriers collecting as well?
It's primarily in town.
Okay.
The rural carriers, they understand that, you know, if this, you know, the word gets out that they might have some stuff mm-hmm. to pick up.
But generally with volunteers, they're...
it's going to be, be in town.
In
yeah.
town. As you mentioned, all of this stuff comes back to the community to be distributed here locally.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that in the past, a number of drives, the Findlay Food for All challenge that's going on right now as well. This is an important time of the year for those food banks and meal providers and so on. Because the holiday donation is starting to run out.
Yeah, everybody think, you know, it's, and we've heard this from the food pantries that mm-hmm. that we support. You know, everybody thinks, oh, Christmas time, Thanksgiving, around that holiday stretch there. Mm-hmm. But we've talked about this in the past, that this drive at this time kind of provides a bridge mm-hmm. Through the summer months, and especially with families that have kids, you know, they might get, you know, their lunches, or sometimes they have before school programs. Mm-hmm. Now, when they're out of school, then right. they're faced with that. And, you know, when you look at nationally, 44 million people fall under the food insecurity category. 13 million of those are mm-hmm. children.
Yeah.
At this time of year, this really helps.
And the letter carriers kind of see this on a daily basis, because you visit all these homes every single day, and so there are few people who recognize the need so much as letter carriers.
Yeah, when we're out in the community every day, you know, on our routes, some of us have been, I was on one of my routes for 11 years, and mm-hmm. you see families and you become a part of that little section, neighborhood, mm-hmm. so yeah. to speak, and yeah. you see that firsthand, and that's why this hits home with us so much.
Yeah. Again, it is Saturday morning, the Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive, the National Association of Letter Carriers, and the local chapter. As you mentioned, if folks would also like to donate in person, they can do that as well. So
yeah, correct.
Maybe,
yep.
Maybe, out there right behind Great Scott.
Yep.
Massive undertaking. Jeff Krantz, again, with us this morning. Jeff, thanks very much for taking the time.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, it is a reality of the times that a growing number of kids are living with family members other than their parents. It could be for a variety of reasons, and there are resources to help support these kinship caregivers. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.